so today we're going to look at the Cartan structural equations, which tell us about relations between the sort of basis of one forms, the connection, and the curvature, and provide a particularly straightforward way of calculating curvature. So it's, if you need to calculate the curvature of a metric and you don't have access to some sort of wonderful algebraic manipulator, then this is actually the best way to do it. So we have to, first of all, I mean, I've obviously in what I've been talking to you about this week, I've used a subtext that I know you know what a connection is. But I want to now formally introduce it today. And I'd actually like to motivate it by just thinking really about what we already know from our real vector calculus, because we learn all this machinery, but sometimes we don't kind of stop to think or put it in context and think about, well, how does it fit with what we know? And why is this the obvious thing to do? And part of the reason I want to do this is because depending on how you've met the connection, it may be you've met it as the Levi-Civita connection or something, you know, with this abstract index notation. And we're going to be doing it just slightly differently. And so it may look a little odd to you at first, but by coming through this route, you'll see why it's fairly logical or straightforward to do. So let's, I'm going to make it really simple. I'm not even going to do our cubed. I'm going to look at our squared. So I want to motivate this by something which hopefully you'll think this is really obvious. So in our squared, our standard basis is the x and y tangent vectors. And so correspondingly, the dual basis is omega 1 is dx and omega 2 is dy. Now, usually we don't really differentiate between these two because they're really essentially the same thing, okay, with our metric. So each of these vectors is the same when we, if we think of our connection, which is really just our intuition on the plane, we take our little xy, our standard basis, and we just parallel transport it all around the plane. So it's just the same everywhere. And then, of course, we have grad, which we can and do represent as a vector, which is just this time a vector whose components, or vector operator, whose components are the partial derivatives with respect to our Cartesian coordinates. So usually when we take our grad, we are either taking grad of a scalar to get a vector, div of a vector to get a scalar, or curl of a vector to get a vector. So we never get really tensors, but we could. So we could even though we don't usually. So this all seems fine if we're in a standard coordinate system, but what about other coordinate systems? So the usual alternative coordinates that you use on the plane are r and theta. So here, from our language as relativists, our coordinate basis if you remember, our coordinate basis is just d by dx mu. So these are our basis vectors in polars, and the dual one is dr and d theta. So these are our E's and our omegas. But quite often when we first meet curvilinear coordinates in vector calculus, we actually take an orthonormal basis because our d by d theta, if you think about what happens as you move a little angle theta around, if you're close to the origin, you don't move very much. If you're a long way away, you move a lot. So that has a different length as you move away from the origin, and that's sort of not necessarily very convenient. So when you first meet polar coordinate bases, you meet them as unit vectors. So in this case, our ER is just the same, d by dr, but our E theta is 1 over r d by d theta. And similarly for the dual basis. So I'm putting hats all over the place. I may forget the odd one, simply to emphasize that these are orthonormal. So we can write so far, this is looking trivial in a way. But we can write our curvilinear coordinates as combinations of the standard basis or covector basis. So all of this should be very familiar, except possibly for the notation. It may look a little weird to be thinking of ER. Well, you've probably seen ER and E theta, but probably not the omega R and omega theta. So let's now think how our basis changes. So if I look at ER, remember the X and Y bases don't change throughout the plane. So if I look at what happens to ER as I move around the plane, it's obviously going to change if the theta coordinate changes. So if I take d by d theta of ER, I get E theta, but then I also have a d theta. So this tells me how my R unit vector changes on the plane. And similarly, grad of E theta looks like ER. And so I see that my basis changes if theta changes. So I also can write this as in terms of the orthonormal covector basis. So here what we see is that our basis changes as we move around on the plane. And that's simply because our basis is linked to our set of coordinates. And whilst the radial direction is always pointing away from the origin, So nothing changes to our basis as we move away in a radial direction. If we rotate around the origin, our basis is altered orientation. And so this is really what we mean by a connection. It's telling us how do our basis vectors change as we move from one tangent space to another, because every point on the plane has its own copy of R squared as a tangent space. And the standard basis merely translates around completely uniformly, but the polar basis has this sort of shift.
So, sorry, can you show why these two are true? What do you mean by nabla? Can you draw a picture?
Well, I'm saying that grad is just these partial derivatives. So, you know, it's how does something change? So in this case, I'm trying to think, if I move, you know, if I want to look at how does my basis change if I move around on the plane, if I move radially, it doesn't change, still pointing in the same direction. But if I move in the angular direction, my basis has rotated, okay? So that's really what I'm thinking about here. So in essence, just sort of look at a small change in each of those basis vectors. So this, if you like, is linking bases at different points. So we're just thinking about what happens as we move around on the plane. So that is really what the connection is about. So the connection identifies how the different tangent spaces at each point on the manifold link together. So our general definition completely analogous to what I've just done in the polar coordinates. So we define our connection by its action on the basis of the tangent spaces on the manifold. And just like I've done here, I say in general, the grad of a basis vector is going to be some combination of basis vectors, and the grad itself carries, if you like, a covector index. So notice that the first element here is, if you like, the differentiating index. Or the derivation index. So that is actually what our connection is. It doesn't have to be a metric connection. It doesn't have to be symmetric, so it doesn't have to be Levi-Civita. All it has to do is give us a set of rules about how we stitch our tangent planes together. Or in other words, our tangent bundle, when we first constructed it, was just a whole set of completely disconnected copies of R to the N lying above points in the manifold. What this does is it stitches them together. It provides a glue and an overall structure on that bundle. So all we need for a connection is that it's a derivation, which is really coming in a moment, being Leibnizian. So let me write down the properties first. So grad has to reduce to Dion functions. That tells us this thing is somehow taking is a derivative operator. It has to be Leibnizian. That's our sort of standard thing for something that's taking a derivation. And finally, it has to commute with contractions. And what that means is that if you're looking at, say, taking a covector acting on a vector, then grad doesn't mess with that. So in analogy with what's going on over here, if I ask, what does grad do when I act on a vector? I would expect it to produce a 1-1 tensor. So here, let's do it over here. Grad of V is grad of VAEA. So this is where this geometric notation comes in. So I use Leibnizian property. And I take the derivative in turn on both of the things inside the bracket, namely the components of V and the basis. Now, V here are just scalars, so this just gives me dVA, EA. And then the second piece, I use the expression for the connection over here. To write down the connection components. And so I can put this now in one compact expression. And here is my 1-1 tensor with a familiar expression for its components. So I just want to emphasize here that these here are scalars, which is why grad became V. So this is very much in contrast with that abstract index perspective, where we would say that grad B, we would write this as grad B of VA in this abstract index notation. So what you see when you think about the components of a covariant derivative, you see that it's first of all taking the derivation of the components, so that's D of the components, and then all the connection pieces arise because of the way the basis changes as you move around on your manifold. So it just takes, it may seem like I'm laboring it a bit, but it does take some getting used to. So that's what a connection is in general. The one we're interested in is the metric connection. So what is that? Well, first of all, we want, because we are interested in gravity, in distances, our fundamental observable is distance. That's what telling us about, you know, about gravitational forces, if you like. And therefore, our connection has to be metric preserving. So in other words, that tells us that grad G equals zero. So G is the symmetric two form that's our metric. So the reason we want to do this is because we have a notion of parallel transport. We kind of believe that we know how to connect vectors together. We just did it right at the beginning with d by dx and d by dy. We know intuitively how these different points on the plane connect together. And so the generalization of that to a curve manifold is saying that we want our metric to be invariant, acting on it with this covariant derivative. The other thing, and I'm not sure if David talked about this, is something called torsion, which is kind of telling us about, more or less, about how anti-symmetric the connection is. So the torsion which we define as a commutator, more or less, of derivatives. So this thing here is like u dot grad, or, you know, it's acting on the covector index of the gradient. So T is a bilinear map from TP of M cross TP of M into TP of M. So it's a tensor. And it's really taking a commutator there of derivatives. So I said it was almost the anti-symmetric part of the connection. It's the anti-symmetric part of the connection plus a correction, which are the structure constants. So if we have a coordinate basis, then the Lie bracket of the coordinate basis vectors always vanishes because the basis vectors are just partial derivatives. And in that case, torsion really is just the anti-symmetric part of the connection. However, a general basis will not necessarily have vanishing Lie bracket between the elements. However, the Lie bracket has to always be a sum of elements of the basis. Therefore, we know that it's a sum of coefficients of basis vectors. That's what these things are. They're called the structure constants. And given that we are, so typically, we're really just interested in two bases in gravity. One is coordinate, and that's the longhand lots of indices basis. And the other is orthonormal, and that's the one where we have a little tetrad going around, sort of stitched onto every point of the manifold. So either of those are good bases, but if we use the orthonormal basis, then in general, we will have structure constants. So now, let's look at the Cartan formalism. Thank you. which provides a very efficient mechanism for calculating connections and curvature. Yep.
So the torsion makes sense if we're talking about a linear connection, right? A connection in the tangent bundle. Is there some sort of generalization to other vector bundles, maybe, the torsion?
Such as gauge, or what?
For example, if I get, I don't know, I could use the spinner bundle just for the sake of it.
Yeah, but so actually, I do have a comment to come back to you on what you asked yesterday. So we are thinking here of so torsion actually specifically is the commutator of derivatives. So, you know, in that sense, it really is associated with a covariant derivative. However, what I don't know is whether if you have additional structure on a manifold, that you can also consider additional, like twist, you know, something with an anti-symmetric nature, let's say. There may be other quantities that you can consider. So I think we tend to not want torsion in gravity because it doesn't correspond to our notions of sort of local sort of standard manifold features. You know? So I know people do work on gravity with torsion, but it doesn't have a sort of direct physical meaning locally. So the first thing that we need is just to give a little bit of a definition, because this is how we're going to calculate. We have our connection components, so the gammas, or the T indeed, those are just scalars, at least the gammas are scalars. Now torsion is actually a tensor, or a two-form, because it is a legitimate multilinear map. And this is like the commutator of derivatives, and then we put the Lie bracket in to make it a geometric quantity. But we don't, in this, you know, when we want to calculate something that is geometric, we don't want to be putting lots of indices around and using this abstract index notation. So we need to package our connection into something that we can calculate with more easily. And so we define one forms. And the reason that we want the one form is because grad here is introducing a covector index. So we can think of our grad as being almost like a covector. It isn't really because it's an operator, but it is mapping us from a tensor space into a tensor space, tensored with the cotangent space at that point. So it's introducing an additional covector piece, and that's really what this is here. So this is our covector piece. So our index here always matches with this one here. So the first lower index on the gamma is always the one that's doing the differentiation, the grad. So these, I say connection one forms or spin connection. The connection one forms is more the sort of geometrical or mathematical nomenclature, but the spin connection is what you would call it if you're coming at this from the perspective of supergravity. So we've already had a question about spinners, but the reason why I'm keeping on about the orthonormal basis, apart from the fact that in a moment you'll see that that's how it's easiest to calculate the connection, is that if we want to put further structure on our manifold, in other words, if we want to have spinners, fermions, then we need to have a global orthonormal basis. So that was a theorem proven by Garoche a few decades back. And the idea is that if we have an orthonormal basis, then that enables us to put gamma matrices locally, because our gamma matrices have the anti-commutation relations that give us the sort of flat metric. So we don't really know necessarily how to curve the gamma matrices, but we can put gamma matrices if we peg them to an orthonormal basis. That's kind of why these orthonormal bases are important. And the spin connection is what we use when we want to take a covariant derivative of a spinner as well. Okay. So what happens? What property do these connection one forms have if we have a metric connection? So our first little theorem, or lemma, or whatever, is that the symmetric part of our spin connection is related to the derivative of the components of the metric. Components of the metric, not the metric. These are just scalars. So how do we show this? Quite straightforward. D of GAB is D of so it's D of the components of G. So to get the components of G, we contract with basis vector elements. So we then use the fact that grad is the same as D when acting on scalars. So this is where we are very definitely not treating GAB as abstract index. And then we use the fact that the metric connection is leaves the metric invariant, and we also use the fact that our connection commutes with contractions. So this is G of grad EA EB plus the reverse with B and A swapped. Then we just input the connection components here. So here we have gamma AC D omega C G of D B. So I've just used what the definition of the connection is on the basis element. And I then know that this is my connection one form, theta dA, GdB, plus B interchanged with A, which is theta BA plus theta AB. So that's straightforward. So notice I haven't actually made any assumption about torsion here. I've just said if we have a metric connection, in other words, if grad G vanishes, then these are the only terms I have. So if we have an orthonormal basis, our vectors have unit length, so they're either, the components of the metric are either eta AB if we're in a Lorentzian space, delta AB if it's Euclidean. And so what that means is D of GAB zero, and therefore the connection one forms are skew symmetric. So that means if we're calculating components of the connection, so we have here the connection one forms have two indices. So, you know, if we don't have any symmetries at all, then you know, that's 16 possible components that we could have. But if we use an orthonormal basis, then we see that our connection here is anti-symmetric, and so that reduces down to just calculating 6 components. Okay, that already makes things easier. So now let's get part, we'll first of all prove Cartan's first structural equation. And so what I'm going to do is to kind of play around with the expression for torsion. So our torsion 2 form we define by mopping up the two lower indices on the torsion tensor with basis covectors. So that's our torsion 2 form. And then I can pick off the components of that. And then I use the fact that this is anti-symmetric in B and C to just say, well, get rid of the factor of a half, and that's theta AC wedge omega C minus a half C ABC omega B wedge omega C. So I've just played around, haven't done anything too substantial yet. I've looked at the torsion 2 form and related it to the connection 1 form and structure constants. So now, let me consider the exterior derivative of elements of the covector basis. So this is going to be a 2 form. Elements of the vector basis are 1 forms. So this is a set of 2 forms. And the components are obtained by contracting with basis vectors. Fancy yet. But now I'm going to recall that identity that I wrote down yesterday that related, was it yesterday? It's not so long ago. That related D with the Lie bracket. So if you remember, we wrote down this relation for a general one form and two vectors. And it says that if we take the contraction of D of the form with two vectors, we can rewrite that as some sort of commutator of the vector acting on this scalar, where we swap out the two vectors, and then a commutator of the vectors. Now, because we're in a basis, this here is just delta AC, and this is just delta AB. In other words, either 1 or 0. So when we act on it with the linear operator, remember a vector is just d by dt. Well, d by dt of 1 is 0. So both of these terms vanish, and I just end up with this, which is the CABC. So that last term on the right-hand side of the torsion is simply the 2 form d omega a. That's what we have. So we get a relation between the torsion, the one forms, and the exterior derivative of basis one forms. And this is Cartan's first equation. So obviously, if we have our standard gravity connection, that's zero, and it tells us we can compute the connection one forms from taking derivatives of the covector basis. Yeah.
Sorry, where's the derivative in the formula?
Which one?
The basis becomes a delta, and then you said have a derivative.
Because the vector, remember the vectors are operators d by dt at a point. Oh. Yeah. No, this, don't worry, this is always the bit where everyone's like, why is that zero? It's because we forget that vectors are maps from C infinity of M, into C infinity of M, which are at each point d by dt. So a vector acting on, these are just functions. The contraction of omega and e is just a function, but it's a constant function because we've got a basis, yeah? And really because omega is the dual basis to e. Okay, so that's our connection sorted, although it might not seem obvious as yet. But now let's move to curvature. We define the curvature of our connection as a commutator of covariant derivatives. So that is our curvature, so it's a map of Tp of M cross Tp of M cross Tp of M into Tp of M. So it's multilinear maps, that's why it's a tensor, and it takes three vectors, 1, 2, 3, and spits back a vector at you, as defined by that formula. In terms of components, make sure I get them in the right order. Remember that when we write down, at least for today, when we write down a set of indices, what we're talking about are components of the geometric object, the tensor in a particular basis. If we're in a coordinate basis, you forget about this last term, and it is the standard expression for the Riemann tensor in terms of the Christoffel symbols. If you're not in a coordinate basis, so like an orthonormal basis, you're going to have that extra piece in there. So that's probably something that's less familiar. We then define curvature two forms. So our curvature, if we don't have a metric, I mean, what I, although I'm obviously got an agenda here with wanting a metric connection, no torsion, et cetera, what I've written down, apart from when I explicitly mentioned the metric, is all quite general once you have a connection. You don't have to have a metric connection to define curvature. All you do is you have a connection and you take the commutator as defined up there on the top right-hand corner of that middle board. And so that Riemann tensor, or the components of that Riemann, are anti-symmetric in C and D, but they don't necessarily have the other anti-symmetries that we usually associate with our Levi-Civita type GR Riemann tensor. So if we want to define a two-form, all we can do is mop up those last two indices, because those are the ones that are anti-symmetric. So that's why we take those last two indices. And then Cartan's second equation
What do the BCD is, which UVW and BCD, which is which?
Sorry, the, could you just
repeat? RABC, the indices and UVW, is it BUV, B corresponding to U?
Okay, oh, I see what you're saying. Sorry, let me just pull that down and annotate. Yes, I see what you're saying. Okay, so the U and the V, think of U as being the C index, V as being the D index, and W as being the B index. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good, good point. So in a sense, the W is kind of the spectator there. You're sort of the bit in brackets is the operator, if you like, that's acting on the W. And it's the bit in brackets that we are packaging together here to give the two form. And then we get the second structural equation by doing something incredibly similar to what we did for the first one, which is we take D of, in this case, the spin connection, and then so it's D of theta plus theta wedge theta. So we kind of almost substitute the omega with the theta there. So that's our second structural equation. So I said these were very efficient ways of calculating curvature, and so I'd kind of like to demonstrate that by doing a bit of a long calculation, but nonetheless, hopefully at least showing you that it's not that bad, because trust me, doing a calculation in front of an audience is much, much harder than doing it when nobody's watching you. So I'm going to calculate curvature of one of those SO3 invariant metrics, but I'm going to make it a little bit easier just so that the algebra, you know, is not, there's no additional clarity, you know, additional gain for complicating the algebra. So, I'm going to look at a static spherically symmetric metric. So the static part means that there's a killing vector d by dt. And so when I do the same process that I did yesterday, where I looked at the SO3 algebra of killing vectors and got sort of in the end a ds squared that had some bit with t and r, and then I said it was minus c squared times the metric on a unit 2 sphere, we play the same game with the killing vector d by dt, and we see that we can reduce things down to this format, where all of these a, b, and c's are functions of r. Now, that's not the simplest way I could have written this metric, because I could further specify my gauge by choosing, say, b is 1. I rescale my radial coordinate. Or I could choose c is r, which is the most common one, where I say that c gives me the areas of two spheres. Or I could choose b is 1 over a. So I can, there's gauge freedom in this metric, but I'm just going to leave it like that, because actually sometimes you want to have your metric written written in slightly different ways. So I'll just note that there's still some gauge freedom, but whatever. Okay. So now we are going to calculate the connection of this metric by using this Cartan formalism. So our first step is to choose an orthonormal basis, because we want to use the fact that the one forms are antisymmetric to save us from calculating things. So notice that all of the Cartan equations are about forms. So we need to choose our basis of forms. Do actually in this case, because the metric is very straightforwardly written, is I simply look at what the metric is and I just say, well, it's block diagonal, and so all I do is just take, well, the square root of this and the square root of that and the square root of that, and you'll see that if I use the inverse metric on these one forms, that the components of the inverse metric are indeed eta AB.
So you are taking C equals to R?
Nope. Oh, yes, mistakenly, thank you. Thanks very much. That's me jumping to the chase there. No, I want to keep it general at the moment. Thanks for that. So now all I do is I take D of these omegas. So d omega t is just a primed dr cross dt, which is a primed on ab minus a primed on ab omega t cross omega r. So that's really okay, not too bad. But I also know that that has to be equal to minus theta t hat a hat wedge omega a hat. So I'm going to do the first one in full detail so that I can jump steps later. So what that tells me is that the only non-zero one form with the t in it has to be a equals r, because there's an omega r there. So in this case, I read off that theta t hat r hat is A primed on AB omega T hat. So that's one of my connection one forms already with minimal effort. So it's also reasonably clear that V omega R is zero because B depends on R and dr wedge dr is zero. So the only thing I have to do now is take the derivative of the theta and phi basis covectors. And this goes down pretty similarly, actually, to the T one. I'm just going to jump the first step there to say when I take d omega phi, which remember is c sine theta d phi, the first bit is going to give me the c prime dr, but then I also have to take the derivative of the theta bit, and so that also gives me a cos theta. Then I've got a d phi cross d theta, so it's plus cos theta d theta d phi with a c in front of it. And then I identify this as 1 over c cot theta omega phi cross omega theta. So now I can read off all the rest of the connection components. Theta theta r is c prime on cb omega theta, theta phi r, and then theta phi theta . Okay, so that is all of the connection. And there are other non-zero terms that are related via the anti-symmetry. So for example, if I want to get theta, theta phi, okay, what is that? Well, that is g, it's actually eta, theta hat a hat, theta a hat phi hat, which is minus eta theta hat a hat theta phi hat a hat, which is minus eta theta hat a hat theta phi hat b hat theta b hat a hat, which is of course minus theta phi hat, theta hat. So I can get all the other ones using the symmetry and the fact that I raise and lower indices just with the Minkowski metric. So that's the connection done. Now to compute RAB, I take d theta AB, so I use Cartan's second equation. So let me start with T again. I'll do this one in more detail. So that's my Cartan equation. And then I look at this second piece and say, well, the only non-zero connection with a T component is A equals R. but then theta rr is zero because of the anti-symmetry. So the second term disappears, I just have the first term, and the first term is just a primed on b dt. So it's a primed on ab omega t, which is a primed on b dt, and so that is a primed on b, all primed dr cross dt, which is minus 1 on ab, omega t cross omega r. So that is my first two-form calculated. What about other pieces? Well, although the connection components of R of T with the connection T theta components are zero, that doesn't mean the curvature two form components are zero because of the second term in the Cartan equation, which is this. So if I look at this, I know that I've got a theta TR, and I know I have a theta R theta. So what I calculated was theta theta R, but I can change that into an R theta by lowering one index, swapping them, and raising an index. So this is minus theta T hat R hat, wedge theta theta hat r hat, and so that is minus a primed on ab omega t hat wedge c primed on cb omega theta hat. So that's that one, and then by complete analogy, rt phi is minus c primed a prime on a b squared c omega t hat cross omega phi hat. So we're now actually halfway through computing the curvature because there are only six independent components of this curvature for the metric torsion-free connection. So let me just finish with computing the curvature two forms.
So the details you can find in section 2.1 so that you don't have to write it.
Yeah, if you're worrying about writing. There's a lot of algebra here, so don't panic if you don't get it all down. It's just, I think, you know, I don't want to finish halfway through, so since the previous lecture went over 10 minutes, I'll go over five. Yep.
Why did you cross that one out on the top?
Because it's zero. Theta RR is zero because they're anti-symmetric.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's... So again, rather similar to the TR component, this is 1 over CB, C primed on B primed, omega R hat cross omega theta hat. So I'm going to compare that to R T hat R hat. So that only leaves me with a third of the curvature to calculate. So let me do phi R. This is the first time things get slightly more, require slightly more effort, but it's only slight. So when I take D of theta phi R, I've also got a non-trivial term coming from the theta wedge theta piece. So I input that in. Out that even though the theta wedge theta piece is non-trivial, it simply cancels off the derivative of the sine theta there. So that second term also vanishes. And then finally, r theta phi actually, let me do it phi theta, it's easier. So I take D of the phi theta components of the connection one forms, which if I look there, it's cot theta on C omega phi, but omega phi is C sine theta, so that's just cos theta d phi. So here I get minus sine theta d theta wedge d phi plus this. And so when I rewrite this out, this is minus 1 on C squared omega theta wedge omega phi plus C prime squared on C squared B squared omega theta wedge omega phi. So although it's slightly encoded, which we'll unravel tomorrow, in the language of the two forms, I've now finished calculating the curvature of that metric. So it's taken less than 10 minutes, and that's including writing on a board. Now, I defy you to do that using Levi-Civita. Just come in, just wrapping up here. You know, using Levi-Civita and doing, you know, the standard coordinate expressions for Riemann. So tomorrow we'll unravel it and we'll take a look at moving forward with finding some exact solutions.